Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to the folks at Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. But more on this later. Right then, let's get right into today's episode. Hey there everyone, happy new year and welcome back to the Inside Line F1 podcast. To ring in the new year, we are revisiting a classic episode. It's about the time when Force India were in talks of hiring some middle-aged bloke from the UK who was pretty good at drawing things on his whiteboard. Some guy called Adrian Newey. Heard of him before? I wonder what he's up to these days. But before we get to the mad story of when Force India were discussing signing Adrian Newey, we firstly need to thank a few people. To be somewhat precise, around 140 of them. Firstly, to the 130 people who took their time to visit our first ever pit stop in Bangalore, where they got the chance to meet and interact with India's strongest Formula One hope at the moment, Kush Maini. We had people travelling from different cities to hear the stories of Kush's racing journey, and Kush just made it extra special by not just opening his archive and bringing in over 100 trophies, 7 race suits and 10 old helmets on showcase, but also by making the biggest announcement of his entire racing career in front of his fans. That's right, folks. We got to reveal that along with his Formula 2 duties this year, Kush Maini will drive a Formula 1 car multiple times this season as a part of the Alpine Driver Development Program. Ah, my word. I still have goosebumps from the moment he announced it. What a night. Thank you to everyone who came in and also to the Maini family, including Arjun Maini, by the way, for being so generous in opening up their hearts and also their archives so that we could share the stories of Kush's racing journey with the depth that they deserve. Now then, back to the episode. On a serious note, the story of Adrian Newey being in talks of signing with Force India is from the early 2010s when Adrian was doing exactly what he's doing today, designing dominant race cars for Red Bull Racing. And Force India at the time, with fresh investment as a mid-table team, was starting to aim higher. So, how did this conversation begin and what exactly went on behind the scenes at the team that would eventually be called the pound-for-pound world champions of Formula 1, that is, Force India? Sharing the stories will be two men who led the marketing department at Force India at the time. The direct but hilarious voice that you hear every week on the Inside Line F1 podcast, that is Kunal Shah, and of course his mentor and colleague Ravikant Sabnavis. Let's listen in. Hey folks, welcome to this special episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Now, I might be a bit blessed in this case because my destiny has just chosen to kind of live out the prophecy, may the force be with you, a bit too seriously. Because I was wondering, well, how can that happen? How can I have the force with me? But luckily enough, today I've got two people who kind of ran the force behind Force India, the Formula One team back in the day. Folks, I've got Kunal Shah, firstly, the former marketing head of the Force India F1 team. And if you've heard of our Force India special episodes before, we've also got Mr. Ravikant Sabnavis. And your official title, sir, was it marketing head? Was it something different to that? I don't quite exactly remember.
It was global marketing head, yes.
Global marketing head. Wow, that makes it feel extra special. But folks, on this particular episode, we've got so many fun stories to talk about, including, firstly, Kunal, Force India potentially not being owned by Vijay Mallya. Could that ever happen?
Well, yes. Thank you for that introduction. And it's, you know, you start every episode saying it's special. And this is really special.
This because, is, yeah.
You know, Ravi and me talking about Force India memories and you bringing them out. And, you know, but on a more serious note, not trying to be very emotional about it, is the way Force India, you know, sort of galvanized the Formula One market and the Formula One fan and built the community in India. I don't see something like that happening very soon in the Indian market, and which is why how we did it, what we did is something so special that to us, of course, because we were within the role, within several other people doing it as well, but also for fans to know how is it that teams are built, brands are built, communities are built and so on.
Come on, you can puff your chest out a little bit.
I mean, you mean more than the 56-inch chest?
I mean, it's just a part of the great work that you two have put in. And it's amazing how memorable Force India still is to this day. I mean, I still have great memories, even though I was, what, 8 or 9 back in the day.
Yeah, crazy. You were a little too young when we were having all the fun in Force India. But coming to your question, you know, which is the most interesting part, right? So Force India, which of course was, you know, originally owned by Vijay Mallya, and then Subroto Roy Sahara became a share owner, co-owner, whatever, was not supposed to be owned by Vijay Mallya back in 2008-2009 when the deal happened. So I happened to be in a conversation with Gautam Singhania, the promoter son of Raymond Textiles, or Raymond as the brand we know it, the complete man. Whenever I hear the tagline, I remember Fernando Alonso, but yes. Okay, so what Gautam Singhania told me was that originally the Spyker Midland offer came to him through Colin Collis, right?
Interesting.
And that he was interested in it, but he didn't want to buy it. So via a common friend who we all know as Robert Fernley, he reached out to VJM, or Vijay Mallya as we call him, right? To say, hey, would you be interested? And then the rest is history.
And for those of you listening, Gautam Singhania, if I'm not mistaken, sir, owns a McLaren Senna. He owns a Lamborghini Countach. And I know it's insider stuff, kind of, but once we had a party at his place for a race event that he organized, he has a 5-floor garage full of all the supercars in the world. Now, how would that have panned out if GHS was owning the team, as he's now called? Because there's no doubt that the funds are available, or in fact, as we can look at today, the funds are more readily and more consistently available. They haven't quite dropped off in the years. Would Force India be on the grid today? This is just all fascinating stuff. I can't imagine how things would have played out.
You know, the first thing that struck me was Gautam Singhania also runs a company called Raymond. The way someone put it.
Well, looking at his Instagram feed, I don't think you'll be able to tell that, to be honest with you.
Indeed.
Wow. So why did it not go ahead eventually?
Well, he just said he wasn't interested, and that Vijay Mallya was interested more than him. Personally speaking, no idea if Force India would have still been on the grid or not, or what would have happened. But I am pretty sure that that's not the only interesting headline story this episode. I know Ravi is holding on to something that he wants to share with all of y'all.
Oh, yes, indeed. This was when Subroto Roy Sahara, or Sahara Shri, as we all called him, actually wanted to hire somebody from one of the teams, and that was an engineer.
An engineer? Wait, who was that? You know what? Actually, let's answer that question after the short break. Stay right here, folks. Hey, folks, welcome back in to the Inside Line F1 podcast, where we were discussing the possibility of Subroto Roy, Shri Subroto Roy Sahara Shri, if I've said that correctly. You can't add too few. I mean, his name cannot be complete without at least 4 superlatives here and there. But you were saying that he wanted to hire an engineer. What? How special is it that we're discussing hiring an engineer? Who is that even all about?
Absolutely. It wasn't just any ordinary engineer. Uh-huh. It was Adrian Newey.
Adrian Newey?
Absolutely.
The Adrian Newey. And if I'm just arranging my timelines correctly, you guys were there in the team till 2015.
That's right.
Sahara bought it in 2011.
Correct.
In the middle, Red Bull won 11, 12, 13, 3 world championships in the most dominant fashion, and Force India wanted to hire Adrian Newey.
Absolutely.
How?
So,
okay, I mean, I may be slightly wrong here, because Adrian Newey ended up joining Red Bull when they were absolutely terrible, but still, I can't make sense of it still.
So, and that's where it all comes together, right? And the thinking behind possibly what led Sahara Shri to actually even suggest that. So this would have been in 2012. And if I recall, that was 2010, 11, there were already 2 dominant years for Red Bull. Correct. So they were on a high, and therefore Adrian Newey was also on a high. And we were, if I recall, we were in this board meeting in Chelsea, and that was in Sahara Shri's residence come office in the UK. And I think one of the questions he asked to the Force India team is, listen, what makes Red Bull tick? Quite simply, what's making them win? And I remember Vijayam saying, Adrian Newey. He says, wo kon hai? Right? Or who's that? He says, he's the brains behind the team. Right? He says, why don't we just hire him? And I think I could see, faces turning into different colors. There was palpable shock. You know, how could you even think about hiring Adrian Newey? So Vijayam said, well, he costs $10 million. So let's get him. So he says, no, when you hire somebody like Adrian Newey, right, besides his salary, he's going to ask for lots of tech related investments, where there's the wind tunnel, this and that. So he says, you're going to be staring at a bill upwards of $25 million.
Wow. And why did it not go ahead eventually? Was that it, the reason why? I mean, was that because it was too costly?
No. You know, I think that's the reason. Simply because that was a reality check. That, yes, he's the best in the business, but to begin with, he comes at a certain cost. And then he brings in add-on costs. And that for a team like Force India, you know, which was probably spending upwards of $75 million, you know, to simply spend this much on one man would have been just too much. And if I recall, Kunal, we were also sharing a wind tunnel.
That's correct. Right? Yes.
So to be able to do all this would not have been possible. So it was a great idea, which I think Subrata Roy had as a new member of the Force India and F1 community.
I don't believe a formal offer was made, though, unfortunately.
It wasn't.
I wish that would have happened, and that would have been fantastic to have a media leak saying Force India makes an offer to Adrian Newey. It would have been fantastic, isn't it?
You know what, Kunal? I think what you have in mind when you say fantastic is you're trying to imagine Adrian Newey doing the Sahara Pranam.
Right hand on the left chest and then saying Sahara Pranam. Oh, my God.
And then touching the man's feet.
That's true. I've seen videos of that. Oh, man. How many such crazy offers fell by the wayside when someone just had to tell Mr. Subrata Roy Sahara that, sir, that's not how Formula One works? Is there any crazy story apart from this as well? I mean, we've all heard about the flattening of the side pods on this particular podcast before. And if you haven't, folks, tuned into some of our previous episodes, but surely, it can't be just two of these stories, right? He's got to have more in the bag. He's been on for a couple of years. He's got to have more.
Oh, yeah. Look, that could potentially be yet another episode because there were so many stories, remember, during the inaugural Indian Grand Prix.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was, you know, whether it comes to, you know, previously Ravi said how everything was bigger in size and scale. You know, he was like a startup founder saying 100 users a second is not enough. I need 100,000, you know. But some of the other things he wanted to do were, which I was really excited about, was what would it take to do a roadshow with an actual Force India racing car in some of the most major cities in Formula One. And suddenly the conversation was not one or two. The conversation was 8 to 10 cities. Oh. Okay. And then what would it take to make multiple show cars and then park them in places of interest? And, you know, while we are laughing about it now, because, you know, we have the license to laugh, some of these were actually very ambitious plans, which just didn't go through because the promoters had their own financial problems, right? And if we go back to Adrian Newey, for example, right? Yes, he comes with his personal cost or his salary that would be. And then all the tools and the tech, like Ravi said, that Force India would need to invest in. But now cut to 2022, 2023, when we are looking at, you know, Formula One, Liberty Media specifically, sort of trying to narrow the gap between the teams. It should be asked, you know, could the likes of Adrian Newey be interested in another smaller team at some point of time in the future, purely because there are budget caps, there are financial regulations. You know, they're trying very hard to have smaller teams, smaller being more privateer teams, actually perform well, punch way above their weight. And could that be a challenge for Adrian Newey or the other bigger brains in the business? And that's probably what could also be in the future. Of course, no crystal ball, but had there not been financial problems, had Force India still been on the grid, you know, like Ravi said, operating at $75 million or a little more than that, imagine how profitable the team and the operations could have been in this generation. And then the ability that it would sort of allow the management to actually invest in the talent, in the tools that money could buy, or the best talent that money could buy.
Which they are kind of doing right now with mixed results as well. And it's exciting times to see how that team eventually progresses. But It reminds me of Newey joining Red Bull as well, because that's what happens, right? When you join a smaller team as a designer, as a star designer who's won many world championships, you expect the complete license to freedom, which was what Newey was given eventually at Red Bull Racing. But that's Adrian Newey. I suppose we've got many, many, many other fun stories to talk about, including the Indian GP and its title sponsor, Airtel. Now, for all of you who don't know, Airtel is an Indian telecommunications network. I think the second biggest right now. It's one of the leanest organizations that's going around in the telecom business, and it survived a big industry change. So they're doing pretty well, but they were also the sponsors of the Indian GP in the first place. But so I have just heard in the prep meeting for this particular episode that they could have been sponsoring the Force India F1 team.
Indeed.
Is that really true?
Oh, absolutely. I think, we engaged with them for a fairly long time.
Mm-hmm.
We met up with their folks. And I think we had a really compelling proposition with some really innovative ideas on what we could offer, Force India could offer Airtel,
mm-hmm.
Right? And unfortunately, finally, when it came down to the wire, they chose, to be the sponsor of the Indian Grand Prix yeah. rather than a team, right?
Yeah.
And I think our logic to them, besides, of course, what we offered, was to say that it's, the sponsor of one race, one location
hmm.
was a sponsoring a team over 20 odd races
exactly.
Across the world. And especially for a company like Airtel, which operated at that time, not just in India, but a few other locations, and perhaps may have had ambitions of expanding, it hmm. made a lot of sense for them
yeah.
to travel with the team, so to say, as opposed to localize all of their effort in one country, especially in one city.
And Airtel was, and still is, big in Africa as well.
Yes.
They are a global brand and it could have worked out. But they dropped off. I mean, why did that happen? Because it seems like such a fun proposition, right? Sponsoring a Formula One team. And at that time, they really did have high-speed internet. So it kind of makes sense, right? Fast car, fast team. We have the best network. Or am I just thinking too naively at this stage?
I think what went through their minds, mm-hmm. Much as we presented this as the proposition for them to own the Indian Grand Prix, mm-hmm. especially because nobody knew at that time that it would fall off the grid very
so
soon
quickly,
so
yeah.
quickly, but they felt, and I think they did a 5-year deal,
that's Kunal, correct
hmm.
right, they clearly felt that owning the Indian Grand Prix would have been a much more powerful proposition for them
hmm.
right, because their first ambition obviously was to dominate in India, right, and engage with their consumers in India, because that was the single largest market.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that there would have been a very logical reason for them to move that way.
Which makes me ask you, Kunal, Airtel sponsoring the Indian Grand Prix, the Indian Grand Prix being such a pivotal event for Force India, as we have discussed in the previous episodes of the series, how involved were you as a team in the, let's say, the organizing and the promoting of the race? Because had Force India not been there on the grid, I don't really imagine the Indian Grand Prix happening at that time. So was there any support from your end as a team, or was there any involvement per se?
Not really, because as a Formula One team, you of course have a home race and then you have every other race. But eventually you just go racing wherever the sport says you go racing, right? Mm. So we did do a couple of site visits and stuff, but that was more so for understanding what would Force India get on ground, which was pretty much what everybody else got as well, right? But what we did do as help to JP, as the promoters, to Indian Grand Prix, to Formula One, is we literally promoted the Indian Grand Prix as the place to be for that weekend when it actually happened in October,
hmm.
right? And all our promotions that we've spoken about in the previous episodes, like Raise the Flag and the likes, were all driving people to the both international circuit, saying there's no other place to be but the Indian Grand Prix. So that was the way of supporting it. I'm pretty confident we promoted the Indian Grand Prix more than the Indian Grand Prix, more than Formula One, Bernie Eccleston himself. So we've really put all our might there. And talking of Airtel, right,
uh-huh.
To me, one of the other reasons why the deal actually didn't happen was we all know that the promoters had their issues, right? Mm-hmm. And those issues were coming to the fore even while the discussions were going on, right? And then you have to remember, in Force India, there were actually two and then three parallel brands that you would end up associating with, right? So let's take Red Bull as an example. When you associate with Red Bull, you associate with Red Bull Racing, and the energy drinks team. You do not associate with Dietrich Mateschitz, or whatever his last name is.
Mateschitz.
Yes, okay. Right? So, but in Force India, when you would associate with Force India, you were associating with Force India, an even more equal or powerful brand, depending on your geography or where you were living or consuming content, would be Vijay Mallya. And then after that, even Subroto Roy Sahara, right? So brands like Airtel were always a little more wary of making those associations. Would they want an association with the Formula One team? Yes. Would they want an association with the two promoters who anyway, you know, dubious stories were just coming out at that point of time? The answer was no. And look who's actually outlasted. You know, Airtel has outlasted all these three brands that we sort of spoke of. Another important point here was Airtel eventually sponsored a team as well. And that was Mercedes. So they had the Airtel Indian Grand Prix. And for the Indian GP, spent a little bit of money on Mercedes. Again, Mercedes, great brand. And the cream on this was, of course, Michael Schumacher, because they actually had Michael Schumacher in one of their advertisements as well, which again was all over the place in the build-up to the Indian Grand Prix.
I remember that so vividly. It was a big, a two-page advertisement on the front page of the Times of India with Michael Schumacher at the Bud Circuit in his Mercedes. As a child, I was gobsmacked, because never had I seen Formula One promoted so vividly in such an open mass scale, even though we had had the Indian Grand Prix last year. So that for me was crazy. Yeah, Michael, yeah. Michael on Times of India. That's
another fact. We were actually competing to have that advertisement as well. A full-page ad.
Really?
The most read English daily in the world ever. Of course, the most read English daily in India, the Times of India. The only difference is that the 1st of October 2012, Kingfisher Airlines was grounded for unpaid dues. And the media company said, you know, that ad is yours, but you got to pay us up front. And now you know why we didn't have that ad. So we had the creative ready. If I can find it, I'm going to tweet it. But anyway, the realities of the Force India Formula One team.
But not you guys, but the owner did have a party with Enrique Iglesias the week later. So I'm not really sure about unpaid bills for Times of India or anything. The money was there, was it?
The money was there.
For some things.
For some things, absolutely.
Well, actually, folks, I've got another fun topic to talk about, which was Force India going black in terms of the car livery. Now, if I remember correctly, sir, we had spoken about Mr. Mallya's, I wouldn't call it antics, but his superstitions about not having a car coloured black because it was unholy or something. I don't even know the exact term to use. I can describe it better in Hindi, but in English, it's just really hard to put it. Superstition is, I think, the broader category we can put it into. But in 2014, the shirt I'm wearing right now, of course, is kind of very representative of that. The 2014 Force India went to a black and orange livery. A very beautiful car, that. I absolutely love the whole design. But isn't that contradictory to what Mr. Mallya had in plan earlier on? He just really didn't want to go for a white car, black car, didn't he?
Indeed. In fact, the entire deliberation that happened 2 years before when the Saharas first came in was not even on the color of the car. I mean, we won't go so far. It was actually on the font color, Kunal, if you remember.
Correct.
What? And
it was on the font. He didn't want the word, Force India F1 Sahara to be in black.
What?
He was finally okay with a gray. Finally settled on a gray.
So if you actually go through the Pantone shades, right, you will never find a black. It's the darkest shade of gray without actually being black. So it's being as close to black, but not being black, the Pantone shade. But
why?
Well, if you remember, the color of the car actually changed to pink later. So it was a sponsorship-related thing. We had Reebok was one of the partners.
Correct.
And then, as Ravi was saying while we were preparing, we had a Spanish apparel company,
yes,
wasn't it? I can't recollect the name.
I'm just not able to
too
remember.
Too many brands.
On the shirt? Is it here somewhere? No,
yours is Reebok.
Ah, okay.
The next one after this.
Ah, right.
And that's why it turned black. And then a couple of seasons later, it turned pink because of BWT and whatever. So money talks. And I mean, that was also when VJM had sort of you know, left the country, if I'm being very polite about it, or fleed the country, if we want to sensationalize it. So it was maybe an anti-India sentiment. I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
Did you guys have access to him at that time? Do you know how infuriated, if he was, of course, infuriated because of this decision? Because if someone just has a certain dislike for a color and his whole car becomes black and orange, I don't think he'd be very happy, no? Especially if it's someone as picky as Vijay.
You know, you're right, but I think Kunal answered that question. If you're him and you're chasing the money, then possibly you don't mind compromising on those superstitions. If somebody is making you apparel, or, you know, you're getting money from a sponsor and he or she is insisting on a certain color.
Cheh, what kind of a billionaire is he? I mean, I thought billionaires would be more picky than that. I thought they'd sell off the whole team saying, nah, I just want my color and not the 25 million. But okay, interesting about that. But another fun fact about that very same car and that very same livery is that Royal Challengers Bangalore, the cricket team we have, of course, mentioned earlier on this podcast, which was, of course, owned by Vijay Mallya, also sponsored Force India in 2014. Now, in this very period of time, we had the Sauber Formula One team having a small football club called Chelsea have the logo on their car as well. Logically speaking, it just doesn't make any sense to me, because essentially you're selling the same product. Slightly different markets, yes, because, of course, football or cricket have a more massy appeal in their respective markets than Formula One, which was, at least at that time, considered to be a very elite sport. But specifically for Force India and RCB, what was there to gain? Why bother?
So, talking of Chelsea and Sauber and RCB and Force India, these partnerships were back in time in the Bernie Eccleston days, right? Those were also times when getting sponsorships globally across sport was extremely tough, because you were talking of 7-8-figure sponsorships, which were tough to come by. There were, in fact, so many teams without a title sponsor in that period. So one of the reasons why a lot of brands globally came together from different walks of sport was to try and see if they could appeal a little more with an elite while as well as a mass approach. But that's not exactly why the RCB logo was on the Force India car. And I'm sure Ravi can narrate it much better than I will.
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at most of the logos and therefore the sponsors on the Force India car, they're largely alcoholic beverages brands.
Correct.
From Vijay Mallya's stable of either United Spirits, which are spirits brands like Vladivar and White & Mackay, or Kingfisher Beer. Right. And then therefore, he had a choice of various brands to pick from. But there were some races, especially Bahrain and Abu Dhabi, where, you know, given the local regulations, we could not put alcohol brands either on the car or on, you know, the team kits. So therefore, typically during those times, we redesigned both the livery of the car. We redesigned the livery of the car as well as the entire team kit, you know, choosing non-Alcobev logos.
And I think Royal Challengers Bangalore kind of act as a very good surrogate marketing approach, because Royal Challenge is a very popular drink here in India.
Absolutely.
And was that the whole reason why the team was called Royal Challengers Bangalore in the first place?
Indeed, absolutely.
And it worked over cricket, it worked in Formula One. Yeah, it's a great way to promote a drink.
And then just like Kingfisher Airlines worked for Kingfisher Beer.
Exactly, yeah, nobody asked. But hey, how tricky was it actually managing out the Gulf markets? Because I can imagine that means changed liveries, changed uniforms for all the crew members, changed sponsor banners, and changed team garages as well. That must be crazy to adapt to.
Yes. And before we actually go into how crazy it was, hats off to VJM for being such a fantastic brand builder. You know, he was, like Ravi said, Kingfisher Airlines for Kingfisher Beer and Royal Challenge for Royal Challengers Bangalore and so on. So he could play around and build these brands as he wanted to, while also self-branding himself as, you know, self-made billionaire, India's Richard Branson, whatever, you know, all the tags that sort of came with it. Also King of Good Times, which then became Emperor of Good Times. I don't know how that promotion happened. It somehow happened.
Snoop Dr. Snoop Lion, something like that.
Has Kanye West become Kanye East? I don't know, but...
I have an explanation for the Emperor of
okay,
Good Times.
There you go, yes, yeah.
We'll come to that, but you were saying?
So, when it came to these Gulf markets, they were actually the worst times to actually be people who were looking after sponsor logos and liveries and stuff, because on one hand, you knew what was actually going to go on the car because, hey, it's, you know, you've done it one race and then you just do it every other race. But you still needed to get it approved by him. And the race team, the mechanics would need an approval 3 months before. And VJM's approval could come anything from 3 days or 3 hours before the cars are coming out on track. So there were always backup logos available in case he changes, how big a logo should be. So there could be that he approves a logo, but hey, just in a different place on the car and the likes, right?
Wow.
And that was always tough. And that caught us out at one race in Abu Dhabi, right? This caught me out specifically. So we all landed up with alcohol kits because, hey, Reebok couldn't sort of, you know, turn around in the time that we gave them. And Andy Stevenson was furious saying, oh my God, you know, we are Formula One team. We can't be walking around with patches because we all had white tape,
exactly,
which we put on all the alcohol brands. And then eventually we managed to get some kits and some stuff for the race team and that got solved. But the biggest challenge was for Deepika Padukone, who was actually one of the ambassadors of Kingfisher Airlines and hence was making an appearance for the Force India Formula One team, among other personal reasons why she came as well, right? And Deepika actually ended up with the alcohol livery because there was a T-shirt made exactly for her size because she was, you know, a supermodel, a very promising or one of the most established actresses at that time, also a very humble human being, had some great interactions with her. And suddenly she walks into the paddock with all the alcohol livery on her.
Ouch.
And then I remember just running to her saying, we need you to change. And she's like, but that's not in my size. And I said, oh my goodness. And then I was busy just putting white tape everywhere on her T-shirt wherever I had to. So some really fun times, which you just had to get your hands dirty and sort of live with things as they came.
Wowee. I mean, even she might be thinking, huh? Really? Do we have to wear patches now? But it's, yeah, crazy how it panned out at the end. I mean, I just would not expect something quite like that. But yeah, I guess we've heard about VJM and how his approvals always come at the last minute, right? We had that story on the last episode of this podcast where we're discussing car launches and you guys just said that it nearly happened, what, 3 hours before the launch actually came up. So, yeah.
But we have to go to Ravi, Emperor of Good Times.
Emperor of Good Times, yes.
So that actually came from, that's a very interesting story. You know, we had Kingfisher beer, which is Kingfisher Premium.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by then a lot of foreign beers had come in, Carlsberg, Bud, and so on and so forth. So, and we were working on Kingfisher Ultra, which would be an ultra premium beer. And then when we were working on the marketing campaign, you know, we said if Kingfisher beer is the king of good times, then how do we position Kingfisher Ultra, which is supposed to be several notches above. And that's where, you know, between us and JWT, our agency, we came up with the Emperor of Good Times. And not only that, you know, we said, okay, so what's the ad campaign going to be? And we never released that and we changed the campaign. But the first campaign that JWT designed for us was with Vijay Mallya as the face of Kingfisher Ultra. And then therefore, by... logically, he became the Emperor of Good Times as well.
Yeah.
So we had all these layouts with the Kingfisher Ultra and, you know, VJM on his yacht here and there and with, you know, Kingfisher Ultra, the Emperor of Good Times.
Who else could it be? I mean, you just don't need to robe in a brand ambassador for Kingfisher as well because you've got VJM himself. I mean, that's just like the living dream for everyone. And speaking of VJM, he also started his own reality show for Force India. I was unaware. I really didn't know about this. Probably because I didn't consume those particular channels. But what's up with Speed Divas? I've just ended up hearing about it for the first time.
Oh, yes. That's a very interesting story. And that, again, all credit to Vijay Mallya for having a great marketing mind. And I'm reasonably certain he drew inspiration from his own initiative at Kingfisher Beer with the Kingfisher Calendar Girls. If you look at when he entered the world of F1 with the Force India team, but of course he had to make that car perform, which he did reasonably successfully, making it the best of the rest, because that was table stakes, right? But he also, but F1 is also about glamour.
Hmm.
And how could he build a brand, which he was always good at, with Force India? And that's when he came up with the idea of having speed divas, right? The Force India speed divas who are associated with brand, as opposed to just having glamour out there. And what was done was to create a reality show in association with MTV at that time, right? Where there was a hunt for these speed divas. And then we selected four girls who then traveled along. There was a uniform for them, a kit. They were trained, and then they traveled around to select races. They were there, you know, for the garage tours. And for a team which was relatively unknown, it was amazing how we managed to draw attention to ourselves, right? Which would have been unthinkable.
Yeah.
And then it was so successful that we then went and did Kunal and I did a season two, this time with NDTV Good Times, which was a partner TV channel.
Exactly. I really just want to know the logic of calendars in the first place, but I suppose that's a topic for some other day when we have a little more time. But I want to talk to you about your favorite Force India memories. Kunal, I'll firstly go with you on this one. A lot of years spent at Force India. What really pops up on your mind as one of your favorite memories from that time there, apart from all the incredible ones you've shared already?
So I'm going to add to the speed divas thing, right? Uh-huh. And how did we gauge that it's successful or it's working for us, right? So typically when you go to a race and, you know, there are these open days when the pit lane is open for everybody, and Ferrari by default would be the most crowded team. Mm. You would not be able to find space to stand even 10 rows after the pit lane is sort of guarded off. You know, those the channel markers that you see at airports, they sort of use that to sort of shut the pit lane, right? After a point, it became Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes and the likes, right? And the fourth most crowded team ended up being Force India, just because people were so eager to go take selfies with the speed divas, get a photo and the likes. And for a brand that, you know, for all the brands that he built also were, you know, one of the pillars were glamour. And this did really well for the team. So a lot of social conversations that started happening for the team. And these were early days for social media as well, right? But coming to some of my favorite memories, and I have some really fascinating ones. You know, one of them stands out is Nico Hülkenberg. You know, he was a test driver with the team. He traveled to India as the face of the one from A Billion Hunt. And I got to ride in a twin-seater go-kart with him at the circuit in Goa. And that was the year when Robert Kubica had his accident. And some of the other regular drivers turned around and said, no, 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 we're not sitting in a go-kart. And Nico turned around and said, where's my helmet, right? So I was doing several laps with him. Great fun. And, you know, we built a bond over those couple of years where he was trusting me a lot with a lot of things and activities we were doing in India. I actually even had, you know, one of the British Grand Prix, Nico decided to take a scooter and say, hey, why don't you hop back? And then we rode from the factory to the paddock. And, you know, when I look back, I'm like, oh, my God, I was actually with a Formula One driver as on a pillion, you know. And then we did a Mercedes track day at the Budd International Circuit. Paul de Resta drove all of us along with Adrian Sutil on the circuit in one of the Mercedes road cars. And Paul de Resta, yeah, lots of memories that I have with him. Not so good, but I'm going to leave that aside. Let's just say he wasn't the most comfortable being in India, even though he was racing for a Force India team. And then, you know, just to sum it up, Adrian Sutil, we've said some really great things about him as a musician and the likes in the previous episode. Two things that really stood out about him, especially Sutilgate, as we know it, right? He was dropped by the team for a year, and then he came back and he met me one of the races and he said, so, same shit, different driver. And you realize that that's literally what you end up doing, right? So some fantastic memories working with great teams, great agencies. And, you know, it's like Ravi and I haven't worked together since 7 years, but it's very familial because we went through a lot of hardships together. We built a lot of things together, having literally no money in the banks for the brands. But great memories. Hopefully, we have more to share in the episodes to come if we do more.
I suppose there are going to be a few. But what about you, sir, if you just had to sum up some of your best memories?
Oh, I think the first and most lasting is Adrian Sutil playing the piano in Mumbai. Blue Frog, was it?
Yep.
And I think over 4 or 5 years, you know, arranging for the season opening parties in Monaco would possibly be another lasting memory. Yes, absolutely.
Crazy, crazy times. But let's hope we have more chances to record episodes like this one, because there are more stories. We can tell that we can, if we scratch the surface, we are going to get some more. And folks, we will do that if you enjoy this one. So reach out to us to tell us if you enjoyed listening to this particular episode and all the other ones in the History of Force India F1 series that we've got right here on the Inside Line F1 podcast.
Crazy, wasn't it? I find it amazing how Ravikant and Kunal were able to give us such great insights on how a Formula One team actually works from the inside, and also, the mentality that some billionaires approach the sport with. Now, I find it amazing that Force India in those days were the pound-for-pound world champions. And soon enough, we'll have a few other guests on the podcast who will tell us more about exactly why and how they did that. Now, to hear more of that, folks, you have to subscribe to the Inside Line F1 podcast. So go ahead and do that and follow us on all of our social media platforms, because some really fun updates about our live events are also going to be coming up there. See you then, folks. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Before we ended, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.